Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today, Shiur is Bechoros Daf Lamed Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Gemara for today's Shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the Shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins two lines from the top of Daf Lamed Vav. Before we begin the shiur, we refer to our title heading that you'll find in the outside margin. Title headings and structural notes are presented from time to time, when needed, in our Shas Ozer, the Shas that appears in your screen, the cornerstone of Gemara markings. In this case, under our Nosei topic heading, we have written Aid Mipi Aid Be'edus Bechor. This involves testimony having been received from an original witness to a particular point. The Gemara begins Ibaya Laho Aid Mipi Aid Mahu Le'edus Bechor. In this case, we would be mentioning that a witness heard or he received information from another witness that a particular blemish was not imposed with intent on an animal. In other words, as opposed to an original source saying, I saw how this blemish got there and it was done unintentionally. We're talking here about someone who had heard from someone that had seen the blemish come about unintentionally. Is that acceptable? Rav Asi says, no, we can't accept such testimony. V'Rav Ashi Shori, and Rav Ashi says, we can. Omar Le Rav Asi Le Rav Ashi. Rav Asi, who is restrictive, asks Rav Ashi, Vaha Tana de Bei Menashe, we have a Tanaic source from the Yeshiva of Menashe that says, Ein Aid Mipi Aid Kosher Elo Le'edus Isha Bilvad. The idea of secondhand testimony is acceptable only when it comes to testimony regarding the death of a woman's husband, information that would lead to her eventual remarriage. A death of a woman's husband, as we said. With that information, she can be established as no longer married, as being a widow, and hence enabling her to marry another gentleman. But we see from this source that the use or acceptance of such testimony, aid me PA, this second-hand testimony, is acceptable only within that realm of law. So Rav Ashi answers, Rav Ashi, who was allowing aid me PA by Edus Bechor also, he says, to me, re-understand or restate this source that you just quoted as follows, that aid me pi aid is kosher elo li aidus she ho isha ksheira lo bilvad, to all areas of testimony that a woman's testimony would be acceptable, and a woman's testimony in fact is acceptable regarding aidus bechor. In other words, if a woman were to come and tell us that I saw this blemish develop on the animal unintentionally, we would accept that information. It should be borne in mind that the points that we are addressing with regard to the blemish arising on the bechor was the subject of many shiurim that we've learned in the past on this topic. So we're not reviewing all of the details regarding blemishes and how they come to be. The Gemara continues, Rav Yemar achshir aid mipi aid bevechor. Rav Yemar accepted testimony of that nature. Kori ole Meremar. Meremar referred to Rav Yemar in the following derisive language. He called him Yemar Shori Bukhra. Yamar, the one who allows firstborn male animals. The Hilchasa and the Gemara rules, aid mi pi aid, kosher li edus b'chor. And in fact, like Revi Yamar ruled, that such type testimony is acceptable with regard to edus b'chor. As you can see, we have a slash mark in the Gemara. This indicates that that which follows is a new idea. On the outside margin, we have a nosei, a topic heading, Dinoi Shel Reb Eloi. This is the halacha that we'll refer to as Reb Eloi's halacha. The Gemara later on makes reference to this as Rabbi Eloi's halacha. Lo hoyu muchzokim boi shehu b'chor. We're talking about a case where an animal that was not known to the public as a firstborn male animal, uvo kohen balov lechacham, and a kohen who received this animal as a b'chor, he came to a sage, a scholar, lirois imhu mum kavua, to establish whether the mum that's in the animal is a permanent blemish that would then enable the kohen to slaughter the b'chor and consume its meat. The omar, and the kohen says, b'chor hu, this is a firstborn, v'zehu mumo, and this is its blemish, and this blemish happened without intent, shamum shaloi b'kavona, shuhumam shaloi b'kavona. Ha'im amrinon, do we say, dinemon mishum shapesh sha'osar hu apesh shehitir? Do we accept the Kohen's testimony, which in general, Kohen testimony regarding blemishes on Bechoros is not acceptable, because they are considered suspect of having intentionally made a blemish, but in this case, we have an additional factor, and that is that the without the information that this particular Kohen provided, we wouldn't have known that it's a restricted animal in the first place. He is informing us that it is a Bechor. That's called Pesh Osar. And he is also telling us that the blemish arose unintentionally. That would be the Pesh Hitir. And once again, the mouth or the testimony that causes restriction is the same testimony, the same source of testimony that would cause leniency or allowance, permission. In general, this concept of pesh osar hu hapesh hitir is acceptable. Let us see the Gemara on this particular point. Omar Rib Ilo, lo hoyu muhsokin boi shehu b'chor, an animal that was not known to have been a firstborn male animal. V'bo echod v'omar shehu b'chor umumo imo. And a kohen comes along, the kohen who is the owner of this particular firstborn male animal, and tells us, this is a b'chor, and the blemish that you see here is a blemish that arose without intention. And now he's coming to a chacham, a scholar or sage, to determine whether it's a mum kavua or just transitory. And Rabbi Ullah says that he is ne'emon, that the information that the kohen provides, specifically that the mum was unintentional, is acceptable. The Gemara asks, "My komash molon, what is Reb Ilor revealing to us through his ruling? Shehapeh she'osar hu hapeh she'hitir, that the source that renders restricted is the same source that creates leniency, and hence we accept that." Tanina, well, we've learned that already in a Tanaic source. Tanaic source being a source of information that predates Reb Ilor. The source tells us about a woman that we did not know before she spoke up. We didn't know that she had ever been married. We knew her as a single woman. And she informs us that she had been married, but subsequently divorced. The source says, Ho'isha shomra, eishas ish ho'isi, I was a married woman, ugrusha ani, and now I am divorced. Nemenis, she is believed, and she will be allowed to marry another gentleman as a as she is now a divorcee. Shahapesha also hua peshe hitir. So here we see that the concept that Rav Eloy was seemingly telling us about in the context of the Bechor, we already know this from an earlier source. So what do I need Rav Eloy for? The Gemara answers, Mahu detema hasam hu dibaya lo amra. In the case of the woman, she could have remained totally silent, married a man, and no one would have raised any eyebrows. So in that case, it's more obvious that she is a good example, a solid example of Pesh Osar, when, once again, she didn't have to say anything. The fact that she is already offering damaging information with regard to herself shows us how believable she is. Once again, because she didn't have to say anything. Aval Hocha, but here in the case of the Bechor, where you're dealing with a situation of an animal that is known to the owner as a firstborn, the Kohen owner, that is, and he also knows that without permission concerning the blemish, he would be guilty of a very serious offense of shechting that which is sanctified. In the absence of a blemish, it would be considered sanctified, and the slaughter of kutchim, of sanctified animals, sacrificial animals outside the Beis HaMikdash, carries with it a very severe penalty. So in this case, the owner could not have remained silent. It wouldn't have been enough for him to remain silent. This owner had to know about the blemish status. People would not eat or violate the slaughter and consumption of sacrificial animals outside the Beis HaMikdash. So I would have said, without Rav Eloy, Loi hapeh she'osar hu hapeh shehitir, that this is not an example of peh she'osar peh shehitir, since there was a need to have spoken up in the first place. It wasn't something that you would call so much a matter of personal choice, but rather a personal need to have spoken up. Therefore, it's not considered a case of someone voluntarily incriminating himself. Therefore, it wouldn't come under this heading of Pesh Osar Hua Pesh Hitir. Komash Malon, Rav Eloy comes to tell us, De'i Mishum Hochi, if because of this, because of the issue of Kotshim Bachutz and the suspicion of and on the other side, the suspicion of his having intentionally made a mum, if it is that he intentionally had made a mum, if that's what you are worried about, havishodi beimuma denikir v'ochile, he would have imposed an obvious blemish, a type of blemish that even an ignoramus would know to be a blemish. And he wouldn't have had to come to us to ask about the blemish under such circumstances, knowing that this is so obvious. And as far as Kotshim Bachutz is concerned, under those circumstances, there wouldn't be any problem of Kotshim Bachutz, because it's a truly, totally blemished animal. So from the fact that you have someone coming to ask about a blemish that's not so obvious as a permanent blemish, and he is telling us that it was a Bechor, but this is a blemish that happened unintentionally, we can in fact categorize this as well as Pesh Osar Hua Pesh Yitir, as Rav Eloy teaches. Once again, because otherwise he would have imposed such a totally obvious blemish that would have alleviated the need for him to come in the first place. So since he had this option of, like in the case of the woman, of remaining silent, in the case of the animal, of not having to have come to us in the first place, we can therefore accept what he is telling us. We continue in the Gemara with a question that we call a long question. You can see we have a kuf that's encircled that appears to the immediate right-hand side of your Gemara text with a vertical descending dashed line, indicating that all of the following lines constitute the question. Maskiflo mar barav ashi. My shno meahu gafer. What is different about this case of the Kohen coming to ask about the status of the blemish, who informs us that it was a Bechor, but the blemish that is here is unintentional? Is it permanent or not? What is different about this story from the case that we're about to learn, which we will see on the surface sounds like a Pesh Oser Pesh Yithir, but it will be presented as an example of something that we cannot call Pesh Oser Pesh Yithir, but rather an example of a story where we are not going to believe what we are being told? And on based on the same circumstances of this story, we're going to raise a question concerning our story with the Bechor brought in by a Kohen. So the Gemara continues with the question. My shnomehu gavra de oigur le chamele chavrei. A story involving someone renting a donkey to a customer. The Omar lay, and the owner who's renting out his animal says, gives him instructions. He says concerning the animal and how to use it, he says, lo tezel b'urcha denar pako dikomaya. Don't travel the Nahar Pekod route, because there is water, and the wet, watery, slippery route is bad for my animal. So don't use that route. Zil b'urcha denarish delekomaya. I want you to go the Narish route, it's the name of another place. Go that way, there's no water. Now our customer comes and ozal b'urcha denahar pekod. Umis Chamra. This fellow went the Nahar Pekod route and the animal died. The Osa the Omar Lon, he came and he told us, Beurcha de Nahar Pekod Asli, it is true. I went the Nahar Pekod route, Umiu, Maya Lohavu. However, there was no water, Umis Chamra, and the animal died. The Omar Rova. And Rava says, regarding this story, Ma loy l'shakir, we should believe, we should accept this person's story, Iboy Omar b'urcha denarash asli. He could have told us that he took the narish route, the route that he was supposed to take. The Omar Abaye, and Abaye in responding to what Rava just said, says, this story is unbelievable. He says, Ma lo l'shakir, b'mokom edim lo amrinon. To assume believability in a case like this, where he tells us that he went the Nahar Pekod route, and the point that was supposed to be the justification or the basis of believing this man's story is that the information that there was no water on the Nahar Pekod route. That's tantamount to saying that the Atlantic Ocean is running dry. In other words, no water in the Atlantic Ocean. We bear witness, we bear collective witness that counters his story, that namely, that there's always water in the Nahar Pekod route. So that once he tells us that he took the Nahar Pekod route, he's basically saying, I took the watery route, and the further information that he gives is of no consequence, won't help his cause at all, because that's called, it's called a Malo L'Shaker B'Mokom Edim, where you have we have collective testimony countering what he is telling us. Likewise, and here is the main point, likewise, we have a Kohen coming in and telling us about a blemish that happened without intent. But once we know that there is a Kohen who is telling us this story, we can say the same thing. Anan Sahadi, we are witness to his having imposed the blemish. That is the expression Rashi uses. There's a Rashi that we've marked off with a dashed underline, just a few lines below this. Hochinami, Rashi says, Kevon da'anan sahadi, that we bear witness to Kohanim chashudim ala mumin, that Kohanim are suspect with regard to the imposition of mumin intentionally. Lo neimo ma li l'shaker. We won't apply the principle of ma lo l'shaker, why should he lie, when that type of testimony is counter to what we know about Kohanim, or what we perceive regarding Kohanim. At this point, then, we have a question. How can we accept, in the Rav Ilo case, the story of the Kohen who tells us that this was a Bechor, but the blemish that you see was came about unintentionally, when once we know that it's a Kohen who is telling us the story, then this concept of Ma'alo L'shaker B'mokom Edim kicks in. We represent collective testimony that when you're dealing with Kohanim, the Mumin that appear are intentional. The Gemara responds and says, Hochi Hashta, how can you compare the case of the donkey renting and the route that he was expected to take with regard to the in the context, or how can you compare it to the case of the Bechor brought in by the Kohen? Hossam, in the case of the route that he was told to avoid, the Nahar Pekod route, Vadai Ikomayo, there is definitely water there. So that once he tells us that he went the Nahar Pekod route, he's basically saying, I went the wrong way. Hocha, in the case of the Kohen and the Bechor, do you say, Vadai Shodi Bei Mumo? Do we say that Kohanim definitely impose blemishes? Chashoshahu. It's a matter of suspicion. Uvemokom chashosha amrinon ma loy l'shaker. And in the context of mere suspicion, we do respect this kind of testimony, namely the ma lo l'shaker. Why should he have lied when he had an easier approach to save himself all the trouble? And as we said before, the easier approach would have been for him to simply impose an obvious type blemish when he wouldn't have had to come to us in the first place. The fact that he is coming to us to ask about the blemish shows us that he is a trustworthy individual. Yosef Ravino v'ko'omar l'hai shmaitzo b'loy gavro. Ravino came and he told us, he was sitting and he told over the halacha, halacha of Rav Eloi, without mentioning Rav Eloi's name. Omale Ravazuti le Ravina. Ravazuti, who heard Ravina, he said, Anan mishmei de Rav Ilo masninon la. We say over what you just said in the name of, we say it over in the name of Rav Ilo. We now continue in the Gemara with a long Maisa. Maisa is a happening, a story. You can see on the to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, the word Maisa has been written with a vertical descending dashed line, taking us quite a bit down till the next Mishnah. We're about to learn a rather well-known Talmudic incident. The introduction to this we offer under our Nosei heading in the outside margin. Maisa bevechoro shurabi tzodok. We're going to see a story involving the firstborn male animal that was owned by Rabbi Tzadok. And this involves Im Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Gamliel. Saviv HaSheila Haim Yesh Chiluk B'inyan Chashad L'Kohanim. The issue comes up, is there a distinction to be made under this topic of suspicion that we accord to the Kohanim, Bein Kohen Tamut Chochom L'koyein Amoretz, Shirak Hu Choshud Lahatil Bomum. When we speak about Kohanim being suspect, is there room to make a distinction between a Kohen who is a scholar versus a Kohen who is an ignoramus? Namely, that when we speak about Kohanim being suspect of imposing Mumim, though that suspicion extends only to Kohanim that are classified as Amaratzim, ignoramuses. The Gemara. Rabbi Tzadok Havile Bukhra. Rabbi Tzadok had a firstborn male animal. Roma Le Sairi Bisali. He served the animal some barley in baskets. The Shita Mekubetzes has a girsa here. Bisale Nitzorim Shel Arova Klufa. Behadi. He was serving in baskets made of willow branches. We'll say peeled willowed branches. Bahadi de ka'ochil ivza sifse. As the animal that was eating its barley, it cut its lip. Its lip became split, which would be a mum. This, of course, is an example of an unintentional mum. Also, lekame de Rabbi Yeshua. Rabbi Tzadok came with his bechor. He came to Rabbi Yeshua. Omarle, Rabbi Tzadok asks, Klum chilaknu bein chover la'amoretz? Do we or do we not make a distinction regarding a Kohanim who are chaverim? Chaverim means knowledgeable. Versus Kohanim that are ignoramuses, namely, do we suspect a Kohen who is a chover as having imposed a mum with intention? Omar lo, Rabbi Yeshua, hein. Hein means yes. We do make a distinction, and you are a Kohen who is a scholar, and therefore you're not suspect, and hence we can accept your story. Also, lekame de Rabbon Gamliel. Omar le, Rabbi Tzadok comes to Rabbi Gamliel and asks, Klum chilaknu bein chover la'amoretz? Do we not make a distinction between a chover versus an amoretz? Omar le, Rabbon Gamliel. Lo, Rabbi Gamliel responds, no, we don't make a distinction. That the suspicion that we have with regard to Kohanim is across the boards. And that no Kohanim are not accepted when they come to tell us about the unintentional nature of blemishes that their firstborn male animals experienced. Omar le, v'ha Rabbi Yeshua, Omar li hein. Rabbi Tzadok says to Rabbi Gamliel, you're telling me no, but we don't make any distinction, but Rabbi Yeshua told me that we do make a distinction. Omar lo, Rabbi Gamliel says, hamtein, wait. In other words, don't take any actions with regard to this matter. Ad shialu bale tracin lebeis hamedrash. Until the bale tracin is an expression referring to the Torah scholars, until the scholars come together in the beis medrash. The term tracin are shields, and talmidei chachamim are considered people that are in battle, like those who hold shields when warring. And in another sense, we can say that Torah scholarship and Torah learning also serves as a protection for the nation of Israel. So the term Bali Trisan is a reference to the Torah scholars. So Ramula says, wait until they get together in the Beis Medrash. Kevan Shilchusu, the Beis Medrash. When they got together in the Torah study center, Omar Hashoel Veshoal, Rabbi, the questioner, probably Rabbi Tzadok, got up and asked, "Klum chilaknu bein chover la'amoretz? Do we not make any distinction between a chover versus an amoretz, a kohen who is a scholar versus a kohen who is an amoretz with regard to their believability regarding blemishes on firstborn male animals?" Omale Rabbi Yeshua Lav. Rabbi Yeshua says, in this public setting, we do not make any distinctions. You notice we have a diagonal dash underlining under this word lav. We have done this in order to draw your attention to this, and on the first wide line of the Gemara, we did the same thing under Rabbi Gamliel's response, loy, to show how Rabbi Yeshua here is paralleling that which Rabbi Gamliel said earlier. Omar le Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel turns to Rabbi Yeshua and says, Malo mishimcha omru li hein. In your name it was reported that you said, we do make a distinction. Yehoshua amod al raglecha via idubach. Well, he says, I want you to stand up or remain standing, and they will testify that such and such happened, that you in fact said that we do make a distinction. Well, Rabbi Yeshua is in this rather embarrassing situation, and he's standing there. Omar Rabbi Yeshua raglov yomar. He announced and said, Heich ese. What am I to do now? What can I possibly do? Il mole ani chai v'hu meis. If I would be alive and the questioner who heard me say that we do make a distinction, if he were dead, so yochol hachai l'hachrish es hameis. He was alive, could counter the whatever comment was made by someone who is no longer alive. However, achshav shani chai v'hu chai, now that I'm alive and he's alive, heich chai yochol l'achish es hachai, how could I possibly lie or counter that which he is testifying? V'hoyo Rabbi Gamliel oimed v'doresh Rabbi Yeshua oimed al raglov. And this scene continued that Rabbi Gamliel held forth in some type of public lecture, and there Rabbi Yeshua continued standing and standing and standing. Ad shirinenu kol ha'om v'omru l'Rabbi Chutzpah Satorgimon amod. Until this became, it infuriated the public to see the public humiliation that Rabbi Yeshua was being subjected to, until it reached the point that they told Rabbi Chutzpah, he was the person who would amplify Rabbi Gamliel's lecture so that they could hear it. Rabbi Gamliel would speak in a soft voice and to Rabbi Chutzpah, and Rabbi Chutzpah was the Torgimon. He was the one that would amplify the lecture so all could hear. So the public witnessing this scene, they said, Amod means silence, stop the Omad, and he stopped the Shi'or. There is more to this particular story that's revealed in Maseches Brachos, where this incident had taken place on several occasions, that Rabbi Gamliel had subjected Rabbi Yeshua to this humiliation, and it actually resulted in the impeachment of Rabbi Gamliel from being the leader of the people. We now continue with the Mishnah. Ne'emon ha-kohen lomar, her'esi b'chor ze u'bal mum hu. A kohen is believed to tell us that he showed this particular firstborn animal, and he received a ruling that it is a full blemish, a permanent blemish. And as the Mishnah says, the Kohen is believed when he tells us this story. He says that he brought this Bechor to a Chacham for his analysis, and he said it's a permanent mum. We believe this Kohen. And this is, Rashi adds, very importantly, this is provided that he brings witnesses that he did not impose this mum, but rather it came about unintentionally. So once we know through witnesses that it was an unintentional mum, the rest of the story that the Kohen tells us, that he received a ruling that it's a permanent type blemish, and therefore he could now slaughter it and benefit from its meat, we believe him. Before going on into Gemara, we have a topic heading. Under our Nosei heading, we have written, Kol Milsa Davida Lugluye. Any information that will become obvious, become revealed on its own, and a person is telling us this information now at an earlier point in time, but it's information that will become or could become known Otherwise, lo mishakri ba inshi, people would not lie about that. Omar Rav Yehuda Omar Rav. Now our Gemara continues. Ne'mon hakohen lomar. A kohen is believed to say, b'chor ze nosan li Yisrael b'mumo. This b'chor was given to me by a Yisrael with its mum. In other words, I received it already blemished. We should note before we go any further, to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, you see a Roman numeral number 1. This represents a we'll call a first version of this discussion. On the top of Omid Beis, you will notice 5 lines from the top, a Roman numeral number 2, also to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. That Roman numeral number 2 indicating a second version of what we are talking about. So, according to this, Rav Yehuda is telling us that a Kohen is believed to say that he received this Bechor already with a blemish from it, from a Yisrael. My taima, why is this acceptable? Why do we believe, when we know in general Kohanim are not believed to tell us about blemishes having occurred unintentionally? So why do we believe this story? Kol milsa da'avida ligluye lo mishakri ba inchi. Any information that could become revealed anyway, even without what the what this particular person is telling us, so he would not lie about it. In this case, when the Kohen tells us that he received this Bechor from a particular Yisrael, we could check this out on our own. We could check it out with Yisrael. Did this Bechor have a mum in it? Before continuing in the Gemara, we will be noticing very shortly a new geometric form. This is explained under our Mivne heading in the outside margin. The triangle pointing up will be Siwa Lehanal, which will serve to support that which we just learned. And as the Gemara continues, we will notice a triangle with its point flipping over, facing down, which will represent the opposite, Kushya Al Hanal, a challenge or question on that which we have learned. So now the Gemara. Omar Ravashi, af ana nami tanina. We have likewise learned in a Tanaic source. Nemon hakoyin lomar, her esi b'chor ze, ubal mum hu. A Kohen is believed to tell us that I showed this firstborn animal for a ruling concerning a blemish, and it was ruled that it is a permanent blemish. We say here that we believe the Kohen. My taima, why is it that we believe the Kohen? Lav mishum damrinon, is it not because we say, kol milsa davida ligliye loi mishakri bo inshi? Any matter that could become revealed anyway, a person would not lie about it. So this will support that which Rav Yehuda told us. Rav Yehuda told us about a Kohen telling us about a story that he had received a Bechor from a particular Israel with its mum already in place. So the Gemara says no, these are not parallel cases. Hosam hu de kochim bachutz lo ochil. In the case of the Kohen telling us that he had shown the Bechor to a sage and he ruled that it was a blemished animal, there we know a person would not eat something that's otherwise, you know, sanctified and slaughtered without a mum outside the Beis HaMikdash. Avol hocha, but in the case of Rabbi Yehuda, when it was an issue concerning how the mum came about, with intention or without intention, kevon de chashidi, chashidi. Once we establish that kohanim are suspect of making intentional blemishes, that label sticks with them, and we can't accept their testimony any further regarding how mumim came about. Let us take a look at the Rashi. Toward the lower part of the narrow lines, there's a Rashi that says, Loi, li'olam e malach, I will tell you in general, Musa Davida ligluye, mishakri inshi. Though it's information that can become revealed on its own, people will lie about it. The Hocha, in the case featured in the Tanaic source, Hainu taimo de mehemon. The reason that the Kohen is believed in that story that he had shown this Bechor to a Chocham, why? Why is he believed? The lo chashidi kani le'echol kodshim tamimim b'chutz. Kohanim are not suspect of eating unblemished, sanctified animals outside the Beis HaMikdash. As we mentioned at an earlier point, that carries with it a very severe penalty if one were to violate it. Hilchach, ilav deshori le'chacham. Therefore, if not for the fact that he really received approval by the sage, lo have omar shoro li v'shochet le below hatoras mumcha. He never would have told us that it was allowed and gone ahead and slaughtered it, unless there really was an approval given by a chacham. Rashi goes on, Aval hocha deko machvi le lichacham. Here, where he is showing the animal initially to a sage, the Omar, and tells the sage, Bemum ze nosan li Yisrael, kidei shelo yitztorech lahavi edim sheme elov nafal. He's telling us that, well, this animal was given to me with the mum already, and he's telling the chacham that in order to save himself from the need to bring witnesses that it happened on its own. Kevon dechashidi kohani lahatil mum ulemeimar nofal me'elov. Since we know kohanim in general are suspect of making, of imposing mumim, and then telling us that it happened on its own, chashidinami lahatil mum ulemeimar Yisrael nosnu li b'mumo. He's also suspect of saying that, of having imposed the mum and saying that it was given to me by a Yisrael. So, if we were to, let's say, isolate the two differing factors between Rav Yehuda's case and the source that Rav Ashi brought in the source that Rav Ashi brought in, we're dealing with someone that is telling us information, and based on that, he's going to go ahead and slaughter the animal and eat the meat. The reason there's believability there is because people would not violate kodshim b'chutz. They wouldn't violate the offense of slaughtering and eating sanctified animals outside the Beis HaMikdash. And the only way that one is not in violation of it is if there is a blemish that's considered an approved blemish that gives license to the current slaughtering of the animal. So, information that shows us or leads to the conclusion that he's not going to be in violation of kosher b'chutz, that one can rely on. However, the Rav Yehuda information was basically information designed to save the Kohen from needing to bring witnesses concerning how the mum came about in the first place. In other words, we're not dealing with the case of what level mum is it, permanent, transitory. We're dealing with another issue. We're dealing with the issue of how the mum came about in the first place, intentional versus unintentional. Regarding that area, the Gemara says, Kohanim are suspect of making intentional blemishes. Hence, anything else they tell us won't be accepted. And as far as that is concerned, the making of a blemish intentionally versus unintentionally, you don't have a serious level offense like kochim b'chutz that accompanies the case to give him credibility. Continuing in the Gemara, Mosiv Rav Shizvi. Rav Shizvi challenges that which we learned above under Rav Yehuda. Ha'omer l'mi she'ein ne'mon al ha'maiser, kachli mimi shehu ne'mon o mimi shehu me'aser, eino ne'mon. If someone requests of a friend, a person who is himself not trustworthy with regard to tithing, the tithing of produce. Miser is one of the tithes that must be removed from produce. So if I tell someone who is not trustworthy on miseris, go and buy for me produce from someone who is trustworthy, or from someone who practices tithing, and this person goes and brings back produce and says, here, this is from someone who's trustworthy. So the source tells us he is not trustworthy. You can't, the one would not be able to rely on this service, this shlichus, and go ahead and eat the produce without tithing once again. Well, am I? Why do we say he is not believed? Neymar, why not say Kol Milso Davido Ligliye Lo Mishakri Ba Inshi? Any information that could become revealed, a person won't lie about. Well, in this case, why won't we believe the Shaliach when he says that I bought it from someone who is trustworthy? Is it not possible that that will become revealed, that he bought it from someone who in fact is trustworthy? And if it would be revealed otherwise, so this shaliach will look really bad, and a person doesn't want to end up looking like a liar, so based on this as information that could become revealed, we should believe the emissary. The Gemara says, "Shiny Hussam." That case is different. Namely, in general, if you're dealing with information that a person shares with us that he knows could become revealed, and if he's lying, it'll be revealed that he is a liar, so a person will tell the truth. However, this case is different. The Is Lei Lishtamuti. This Shaliach, the emissary that was sent out to get the produce from someone who is trustworthy, has an excuse he can offer. In other words, in the event that we discover who provided the produce, and it turns out that the person that gave the shliach this produce was a person who is not trustworthy, the shliach nevertheless won't come out looking bad, because he can offer an excuse. What's the excuse he can offer? He can say, well, you know, you sent me to get the produce from someone who was trustworthy. I thought the person that I was getting it from was a trustworthy individual. To me, he seemed trustworthy. When it becomes revealed that he's not really trustworthy, that doesn't cast the shaliach in bad light, though, because of this excuse. Therefore, since he knows he can always use this excuse, well, I thought he was trustworthy, he won't hesitate to, he doesn't, there isn't any sufficient, there isn't sufficient deterrent from him going to someone who initially is really not trustworthy. The Gemara continues and says, Seifa, notice the triangle pointing up, that indicates we will bring support to Rav Yehuda. Seifa vadai mesayale, the latter part of the source definitely supports Rav Yehuda's contention that Kol Milsa Davila Gluya Loyin Mishakri Bo Inshi. What does it say in the Seifa? If a person was instructed to go buy Meish Ploni, go and buy from a specific individual, Hare Ze Ne'emon. the emissary, when he comes back with the goods, even though the emissary himself is someone that's not trustworthy, when he comes back with the goods and says, well, I got these from the person you sent me to, and here he was sent to a specific individual, and not sent to an individual, to a general selling public, leaving trustworthiness up to the shaliach to determine, but rather here he was sent to a specific individual. Hasam kevon de is le toveya mirtas. Rashi points out that this is a rejection of what we were trying to do. We thought that by from the Sefer you would see support to this concept of milsa davila glula mishakibo inchi. And yet, the Gemara itself says, no, from here you don't see that principle. Here, there is a major additional deterrent that's built in. So, let us look at the Rashis that are relevant to this last line of Gemara. Rashi on the second line from the top, Me'ish Ploni, Dehizkir Loi Mishalech Shem HaNe'emon. Here, the sender mentioned the specific name of someone who was trustworthy. Harei Zeh'emon HaShliach. The Shliach will be believed when he says, well, I went to so-and-so to bring you the produce. Dechayish, he fears, the Shliach fears, Shemo Yitbe'eni. He might seek it out from me. He might collect from me. V'nimtzesi mishakir. In other words, if it turns out that I went to someone else, so the sender will turn to me, the shaliach, and say, hey, you know, I gave you money to go to a specific person. You went to someone else. So I want you to pay me back. This final section of the Tanaic source seems to support Rabbi Yehuda, that things that could become revealed, in other words, in this case, it could become revealed that I went to someone else, so a person will not lie about that. As it says in the source, Nemon, he is believed. The Rashi goes on and explains the point of rejection, where this is not a support. Hasam kevoniko toivea mirtas kloimar. Meho loy tesayea. From here, you can't support Rav Yehuda's teaching. Hasam mirtas shaliach. Here the emissary is fear-struck. Since the emissary sees that the sender was specific and particular about the vendor unto whom he was sent, he mentioned the vendor's name. Sovar vada yidbeenu. The emissary, the shaliach, figures, well, he's definitely going to seek collection from me. So this point of the feeling that the emissary has that he will definitely be sought out for collection purposes if he did anything wrong, that is what motivates him to tell the truth. Aval gabi b'chor, but with regard to the issue of a firstborn and the appearance of a blemish, lo mirtas hai kohen, the kohen doesn't have any built-in deterrent. Sovar mi yitrach legapi zahar devorai v'lishal oisu Yisrael nosu liba mumo. He figures, who says that the Chacham, to whom I told this story, is going to go looking for the Israel to check it out, to cross-examine the Israel, whether I was given this Bechor already with a Mum. So there's a much different level of concern, we'll say, that you find by the shaliach sent to buy produce given a specific name of a vendor versus the case of a kohen who on his own is coming to a chacham telling a story about his receipt of the bechor from a particular Israel with a mum in it already. So the just to read the last line of Gemara again, the second line from the top, Hasam kevon de is le tovea. There, in the case of someone sent to buy the produce from Ish Ploni, from a specific individual, since there is a tovea, namely someone who is apparently willing or motivated to seek compensation or collection, so mirtas, the emissary, the shliach, will be there is built-in fear or deterrent. To do anything wrong, to do anything other than he was instructed, and therefore he is believed. Omar Rebbe Yirmiyah Bar Abba, Mino Le Yehuda Ha. Rabbi Yirmiyah says, where does Yehuda get this from? Ano beGidol kavate, I taught this issue over to Gidol. Gidol is the name of a sage. VeGidol kava b'didei, and Gidol, he is the one that taught it to Rabbi Yehuda. VeHachi amri lei, and thusly I, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, taught Gidol in the first place. And here you see a Roman numeral number 2, and we'll see now a different version. Nemon Yisrael Lomar, a Yisrael is believed to say, Bechor zen osati l'koyin b'mumo. This, the firstborn that you see by a this Kohen, I gave it to him already with its mum. So the major difference here is the one who is speaking, and we are expected to believe in this case is a Yisrael. In the version we saw under Roman numeral number 1, where you see. We also had dashed underline the individual of concern. There was Naaman HaKohen. There we were trying to afford believability to a Kohen. So Rav Yirmiyah Ba'aber tells us that Rav Yehuda received some type of information about believability, but it didn't involve a Kohen. It was rather a Yisrael. The Yisrael is believed to say that he gave this Bechor to the Kohen with its mum already. So the Gemara says, really, is that the halacha that you taught over Yisrael, Pshita? It's obvious that a Yisrael is believed. The whole issue of suspicion revolves around Kohanim being suspect of imposing the blemishes. After all, the Kohen is the one that stands to benefit from the Bechor, so he's motivated to practice foul play, but the Israel isn't going to benefit anyway from the Bechor. So, of course, the Israel is believed. So, what's the point of teaching this? Loi tzricha bekotan vehigdil. This concerns a situation where the Israel had given over a Bechor to a Kohen when it was small, when it was young, and the Yisrael is now reporting the story at a much later point in time when the animal grew, a higdil, it's large. Mahu detema, without this particular teaching about the ne'emonus of the Yisrael, I would have thought, lo kim lei bei, the Yisrael won't recognize this to be the animal that he had given to the Kohen. After all, it grew, and maybe he won't recognize it. And maybe the animal that the Kohen is holding on to is an animal that he himself, the Kohen, imposed the blemish. Komash Molon, that's what this version of the Halacha tells us, we'll call it Roman numeral number 2, that even though the animal grew, we still say that the Yisrael is believed when he says, this was my animal that I had given to the Kohen with a mum. Besura Masnu Kalishna Basra. In Sura, which was a well-known Talmudic academy in Babylonia, they taught over like the second version, in other words, Ne'emon Yisrael, with all of its ramifications. Bepobadisa Kalishna Kama. In the Pobadisa Academy, they taught over like the first version, namely even a Kohen is believed when he tells us the story that he received a Bechor from a particular Yisrael with its mum in it already. V'ilchasam afilu kalishna kama. The Gemara itself rules that we will extend believability to the Kohen like we had under our first teaching, namely the Roman numeral number 1. And as far as the Gemara here is concerned, we accept the teachings of both number 1 and Roman numeral number 2, that both the Kohen is believed with his story that we saw there, and the Yisrael is believed with this story that we see here. As we go on in the Gemara, we encounter a new marking. We see a house form. The Mivneh heading in the outside margin tells us, Maisim Shahavuas Bechor Lufnei Chacham. We'll see two stories, two incidents involving a firstborn being brought to a sage for a ruling. Rafram Mipopadisa Havelei Buchra. Rafram had a firstborn male animal, viave le kohen velo mumo. He gave it to a kohen, however, without any blemish. Ozal shoda be mumo. The kohen then imposed a blemish. Yumochad chosh be'enei. One day, Raphram had a type of eye pain, an eye ache. I say lekamei. The kohen came with the animal that he received from Raphram. Omarle, and the kohen said, Bechor ze nosan li Yisrael b'mumo. This Bechor was given to me by Yisrael already with its blemish. Well, it's a little strange. He's coming to Raphram, the one he gave it to, the one who gave it to him in the first place. Arpasine li'ene. Raphram strained himself to open his eye, to look at the animal. Chazye b'shikre, and he noticed the lie here. Omale, Raphram says to this kohen, Lavano di'aivte loch, am I not the one that gave it to you? And I gave it to you without a blemish. So what kind of story are you telling me that you got it from Yisrael with a blemish? So Raphram actually caught this guy lying. V'yafilu hachi, and even so, lo chosh lo lemilsa. Raphram, we didn't mention this earlier, but we had written it into our Gemara, the Shas Ozer. We had written in between the lines when we introduced Raphram from Pumbedisa. Remember, Pumbedisa paskind just above Raphram. There's a squiggle underline Pumbedisa at the beginning of the line. Pumbedisa paskind that we do believe the Kohanim when they tell us the story about their having received it from a Yisrael with its mum. So Raphram from Pumbedisa was coming from that school of thought that we believe Kohanim. We have a story here of a Kohen actually coming to Raphram, telling us the story of his having received it from Yisrael with its mum. Here, the Kohen was caught lying, but still the Gemara Safilochi lo choshle lemilsa. Raphram didn't concern himself with this particular story to serve as a reason for changing his opinion. Rather, hi hu de chatzif, kuliyama lo chatzifi. This particular coin was full of chutzpah. But that doesn't mean that all kohanim will be full of chutzpah, of nerve. Hahu sarua dosa lekamei de Ravashi. This is a case of a firstborn male animal with two limbs of differing size, namely one small eye and one large eye. That's a sorah. Sorah is an expression that refers to animals with whose limbs are of unequal size. So a case of a sorah came to Ravashi. Omar, Lamai Nehushle, what should we worry about over here? E Koyenhu, E Yisraelhu. Should I concern myself with the fellow bringing the animal to me, whether he is a Kohen and hence suspicious of imposing blemishes, or he is a Yisrael and therefore someone I don't have to worry about? In this case, that would be a non-starter. Hare b'choru mumo imo. This is a blemish that a person couldn't have imposed in the first place. This is a blemish from birth. So, as far as Ravashi is concerned, there's no issue over here, and therefore, it should be allowed. Amale Ravina le Ravashi. Vidilma, maybe Yisrael who, maybe the person bringing in the Sarua for a ruling is a Yisrael, namely is a non-Kohen. He is someone that has to give it away to a Kohen. The Omer of Yehuda, Ein Royin Bechor Yisrael Elim Kain Kohen Imoi. Rav Yehuda has a teaching that says that a sage is not allowed to look at and rule concerning a Bechor of Yisrael, unless he is coming in with a Kohen. Because there, if he comes in alone, and the Yisrael receives a ruling that the blemish is a permanent type blemish, there's a fear that the Yisrael will keep the animal for himself. This is called a chashash gezel. We're afraid he'll steal it, meaning keep it for himself, not giving it to the rightful receiver, a Kohen. People, as peculiar or ironic as it may seem, they are more concerned with certain types of offenses than others. So that with regard to different religiosity levels, people are would be worried about kachin b'chutz, which it's true, it carries with it a severe penalty known as kores. But those very same people who are worried about kachin b'chutz aren't worried about taking something that's not theirs. So knowing this, maybe the person coming to Rav Ashi with this sorua is really a Yisrael, and he's coming alone, and therefore we shouldn't deal with him at all because he's coming alone and not with a Kohen. If he were to come with a Kohen like we expect, like we rule, then that alleviates the chashash gezel, because once the Yisrael hears that there is a permanent blemish and the Kohen is with him, so the Kohen will take it, and thereby avoiding all gezel problems. So Ravino raises, maybe this is something to concern yourself with. Omar Lay. So Rav Ashi says, Hochi Hashta, how can you compare this case with that general rule? Hosam, there, with the general rule of not bringing a Bechor to a Chocham unless the Kohen is there together with Israel. So there, Nehi Dekotchen Bechutz Lo Ochil. Granted, people won't want to violate the offense of kachin b'chutz, of eating sanctified animals without a prior permanent blemish. Amamoni the kohen choshid. But with regard to the mamon, the possessions due to kohanim, that people are suspect over. Hence, we have this ruling that ein roin b'chor Yisrael im kein kohen imoy. However, hocha, in the case coming to me, says Rav Ashi, michti yoda dahai mum muvhaku. This person knows that this is a pronounced blemish, namely a blemish that is of no question about its permanent nature. Not only permanent nature, but it couldn't have been imposed by anybody in the first place. This is the case of the sarua, the different sized limbs. My taimo asua kamei rabbonon. Why is he bringing it to a rabbi in the first place? Why is this Yisrael bringing the sarua to me? Mishum kvodo de chocham, as a sign of respect to the sage. It is it's an act of respect when someone brings a halachic issue to a rabbi for a ruling. In other words, even though it's not something that really requires a formal ruling, but the act of presenting a case to a rabbi has with it an element of respect. Al kvodo de chocham lo ovar. This person is concerned even about the area of honor to sages. Isura Ovar, do you think he would be in violation of theft, of keeping it for himself? Certainly not. Therefore, Rav Ashi says, I don't have anything to worry about. We should have pointed out, but you can see that from the Omar Lei Hochi Hashta line, till now we had a long answer, as is illustrated by the long answer marking the tuf that you saw encircled to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text with a vertical descending dashed line. All of this was Rav Ashi's response to the issue that Ravina had risen. The Mishnah. Hakol ne'monim al mumei meiser. Everyone is believed with regard to blemishes as they appear with regard to meiser behema. They are believed to say that the blemish happened on its own. A meiser is a case of the tithe of one-tenth of a particular year's birth of animals. Those animals that are set aside as the meiser behema are essentially expected to be brought as a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. However, if they have a blemish in them, so they don't need to be brought. Our Mishnah is telling us, and of course it goes without saying, that animals that are sanctified, one is forbidden to impose a blemish on it. And if one does, so one can't rely on such a blemish for the allowance of the meat outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Our Mishnah tells us that everyone is believed when they tell us that the blemish on a particular meiser behema was an unintentional blemish. The Gemara asks, "My Taima, why is everyone believed?" The answer to that is, and the Gemara has an attempted answer, but we should just point out in general, the general format of this kind of situation is where a person had another option which would have gained him the same results, and that other option would have saved him from the need to ask or saved him from the need to lie, and he nevertheless doesn't exercise that other option but exercises this, we'll call it, more problematic option, that gives him believability. So here the Gemara says, you're asking, why is everyone believed with regard to the mumim of a meiser behema? De'i boy, if he wanted to, shadi bei mumo meikara, he could have imposed a blemish on this tenth animal from the outset. The Gemara asks, mi yoda heinofik, but how did he know which animal was going to come out as number 10 in the counting? After all, the animals are gathered in a pen, and then they're set through a narrow passageway whereby he counts each animal as it emerges, 1, 2, 3, 4, until he gets to number 10. So if he had a group of animals and he imposed a blemish on one of the animals at the outset, who says that that's the animal that was going to come out as number 10? So the Gemara goes on, v'chitemo mapikle b'reish asara. Well, he could have set it up that way, that this animal will come out as number 10. The blemished animal will come out as number 10. Well, he couldn't do that. Lo yivakir bein toiv l'ra, Omar Rachmona. The Torah tells us not to set up things in that way, that a specific animal, a specific blemished animal, shall come out as number 10. So why is he believed when he says that this mum came about unintentionally? What other option does he have other than his telling us this story? Elo, the Gemara answers, de'i boi shodi bei muma bekule edre. He could have imposed blemishes on his entire flock before he passed them through for the counting. So then it's inevitable that a blemished animal would have come out as number 10. So since he had an option of having a blemished animal that was with, we'll call it, intentionally blemished animal, but having done nothing wrong, because prior to the counting, none of those animals are sanctified. So he had a way of creating a blemish without being in violation of any law. Hence, even someone whose animals are not blemished, except for the one that he's coming with right now and telling us that it's a meiser animal with a blemish, and he also tells us it was an unintentional blemish, we believe him. Once again, why do we believe him? Because he had another way of doing things that wouldn't have involved any suspicion of wrongdoing. The Mishnah. Bechor shenismeis eino v'shenikto yodoi v'shenishbor ragloi. These are examples of mumin that are very obvious. Hareze yishochet al pi shloisha b'nei haknesis. Let's go over the Mishnah again. A bechor shenismeis eino, whose eye is blinded, or nikto yodo, its hand, its front leg is cut off, shenishbor araglo, or its hind leg is broken. This can be slaughtered through the ruling of three commoners, people that are not expert. Rabbi Yosi Omer afilu yesham chaf gimel, even if there are 23 people there, eino nishchat elo al pi mumche. It cannot be slaughtered unless you have an expert present. We see from this Mishnah that in addition to the establishing of a blemish as being permanent in nature, here we have examples of blemishes that are clearly permanent in nature. However, there is a need to get approval of its slaughter. The issue of the needed approval of its slaughter. Again, this is not an issue of a psak, of a ruling concerning the quality of the blemish, permanent or transitory. But it's basically a license to go ahead and slaughter this blemished bechor. There is a need for getting rishus. That is what we see in this Mishnah, and we see a machlokes concerning the number of people or who is required in order to provide this license. According to the Tanakhama, when you have what we call an obvious type blemish, so even three commoners can issue this ruling or this license. According to Rabbi Yossi, there has to be a mumche amongst the ones issuing the ruling. A mumche being an expert. The Gemara continues. We have a couple of lines of names until we get to the actual point, about four lines of names. Rav Simloi, Rav Yehuda Nasiya, Travaihu, Mishmei, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Amri. Both Rav Simloi and Rav Yehuda say in the name of Yehoshua ben Levi. The Amri law, another version, is Rav Simloi, Rav Yehoshua ben Levi, Travaihu, Mishum, Rav Yehuda Nasiya, Amri. In this case, Rav Simloi remains one of the speakers, but it's either, in this case, it's in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya, as opposed to the first version had Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya as the second speaker. What do they say? Hatoras b'chor b'chutzal aretz al pishloisha b'nei haknesis. The license to slaughter a firstborn male animal outside the land of Israel requires the approval of three, but they may in fact be three commoners. Omar Rava uvemumin muvhokim. The ability to accept three commoners is when we're speaking about an obvious blemish. So Rava adds this information that in order to accept the shlosha b'nei haknesses, the three commoners, it would have to be dealing with the case of an obvious blemish. The Gemara asks, "My komash molon tonino." What is Rava telling us that we haven't already learned in our Mishnah? And it's pointed out by the Rabbeinu Gershom that our Mishnah, in fact, is a chutz la'aretz Mishnah, as this Mishnah is attached to previous Mishnahs we saw in Daf Lamed Hey Omen Aleph, the case of the old Bechor with the long hair and the Kasdor and the Roman official that came along and imposed Mumin, and that was a Bechor that had actually no Mum in it. Had it been a Beis HaMikdash time, an Eretz Yisrael, Bezman Beis HaMikdash Mishnah, then so what it was all, they could have offered it as a sacrifice. So we see that the need for the mum in that Mishnah, which precedes this Mishnah, in other words, these Mishnayos are all considered one unit of Mishnayos, so we're dealing with a with a group of Mishnayos that are clearly non-Beis HaMikdash time Mishnayos. So if that be the case, what is Rava adding that I don't know from our Mishnah? It says, and we have this in a frame, Bechor shenismes eino v'sheniktor yodo v'shenish biro ragloi. These are all examples of mumin muvhalkim, just like Rava said. Hareza yishachet al pi shloisha b'nei hakinesis. It can be slaughtered with the license provided by three commoners. So, the question is, once again, what does Rava add that I don't know already? The Gemara answers, Ime masnisin, hava amina, if I didn't have Rava, if I would have had just the Mishnah, I would have thought, b'chutz la'oretz afilu mumin she'ein muvhokin. Three commoners can give their approval even if it's not an obvious mum. V'hai dikotoni muvhokim, and the Mishnah that features obvious mumin, l'hodiacha koichoi de Rabbi Yossi, to show us how far Rabbi Yossi goes, that there has to be a mumcha even in the case of an obvious mum. But once again, had I had just the Mishnah, I would have thought that this the acceptability of three commoners would have extended even to mumin that are not muvhok. Komash Malon, Rava comes to tell me that the acceptance of three commoners is only in the case of obvious mumin, obvious blemishes. Omar Rabbi Huda, Omar of Yirmiyahu bar Abba, Sofek Mishmei de Rav, Sofek Mishmei de Shmuel. So Rabbi Huda tells us over in the name of Rabbi Yirmiyahu, who got it from either Rav or possibly from Shmuel, that's a matter of a Sofek. What halacha does he teach? Shloisha matirin es habachor b'mokoyim she'ein mumche. Three can rule concerning a Bechor in the event that you don't have an expert in the vicinity. The Gemara asks, my Komash Malon, what is Rav Yehuda teaching me that I don't know from the Mishnah? Tanina, our Mishnah says, Hareza Yishochet al pi Shloisha b'nei haknesis. So, isn't that what Rav Yehuda is teaching us? The Gemara says, "E mimas nisin." Had I had just the Mishnah, "Have amino afilu b'mokoyim mumche," that the Mishnah gives license to three commoners to issue rulings concerning Bechor, even in the vicinity of an expert. Komash Malon, Rav Yehuda tells us, "B'mokoyim she'ein mumche in." Three can function. Three commoners can function when there is no expert around. But in a case where there is an expert in the vicinity, then three commoners cannot issue Bechor rulings. Omar Rav Chiya bar Amram. Rav Chiya tells us 2 points. One, Shloisha matirin es habechor b'mokoyim she'ein mumche. Three can rule concerning a firstborn male animal and give license to its slaughter when there is no expert in the area. And number two, Gimel matirin es haneder b'mokum she'ein chocham. Three commoners can rescind a vow in the case that you don't have a scholar around. When one takes a vow and then expresses, we'll say, regret, or circumstances arose that he didn't take into consideration at the time that he made the vow, and he now wants to undo the vow. So there's a process known commonly as Hatoras Nidorim. So the halach here is telling us that three can rescind an individual's vow in a place that there is no sage. If there is a sage, then so he is the one to do it. We now go over these 2 points. Three can rule concerning a firstborn male animal when there is no expert around. Now, this point is lafuke midi Rabbi Yossi. This is to the exclusion of Rabbi Yossi of our Mishnah, who did not give approval or did not allow the ruling of three commoners. He insisted on a mumche. So this ruling that says three commoners can rule concerning a Bechor is to the exclusion of Rabbi Yossi. The second point, shloisha mefirin, or there's another gisa, matirin es haneder, b'mokim she'ein chocham. Three can undo a neder when there is no chocham around. This halacha implies that if there were a chocham, he alone could undo the vow. Well, this teaching, this ruling is lafuke mid Rabbi Yehuda. This is to the exclusion of Rabbi Yehuda, who appears in the following brisa, desanya, haforas nedarim b'shloisha. The undoing of vows is done by three. Rabbi Yehuda omer echod mehem chocham. One of the three must be a chocham. So Rabbi Yehuda indicates that you need to have three, one of whom is a chacham. The ruling that Rabbi Chiya taught was a ruling to the exclusion of the need for three when you have a chacham. Just to go over this point again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, even if you have a chacham, that's not enough. He has to be with another two. According to Rabbi Chiya, if you have a chacham, he alone would be sufficient. So we're saying that Rabbi Chiya's ruling is to the exclusion of Rabbi Yehuda. When we speak about a chacham, we had mentioned b'mokom she'ein chacham, kegon man, who is the chacham that is considered a chacham? By name, can you name someone that would be classified as a chacham? Omar Rav Nachman kegoin ano. Rav Nachman says, someone like me, someone who is at my level of Torah learning, he could be considered a chacham. Rabbi Yehuda omer echod mehem chacham. Rabbi Yehuda said, you need to have three, one of whom is a chacham. Michlal dahanoch koldahu. Are you suggesting that the others can be totally ignoramuses, even amaratzim? How in the world can an Am HaOretz, can a total ignoramus be expected to participate in this process of undoing vows? Omar Ravina. Ravina says, the other two are as follows. Demis Beri Lehu Visavi. These are people at a certain level of intelligence that you can explain to them the laws of Nedarim, and they will then understand it. So as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, you have one person who's already a chacham, and he will explain to another two people, and if they can absorb which he's teaching concerning vows, that will constitute a unit suitable for undoing vows, according to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi oimer afilu yesham chav gimol. Rabbi Yossi says, even if you've got 23 people there, it's not good enough if they are commoners. Omar Rav, and that had to do with the teaching in the Mishnah licensing the slaughter of a Bechor, commoners, according to Rabbi Yossi, are not sufficient. You have to have a mumche. The Gemara continues, Omar Rav Hananel, Omar Rav, Ein Halocha K'Rabbi Yossi. The Halocha is not like Rabbi Yossi. This is Rav's ruling, and rather, three are enough. The Gemara says, what do I need Rav for? Pshita, yochid v'rabim, halacha k'rabim. When you have an individual opinion running up against a majority opinion, the majority opinion will overrule. So it seems obvious, even without this ruling, that the halacha is not like Rabbi Yossi, that the halacha, in fact, will be unlike Rabbi Yossi. So the Gemara answers, mahu detemo, Rabbi Yossi nimuko imo. I might have thought that since the individual in this particular discussion happens to be no less than Rabbi Yossi, and when Rabbi Yossi speaks, he speaks with a great deal of authority. Rashi says, "Nimuko tamo shoyamevi tam ledvar of kol shoy." He used to give reasons for his rulings. He didn't just issue rulings, but he gave learned reasons for his rulings, and that would give more weight to a Rabbi Yossi ruling. Kamash Malon, therefore I have to be told here that even though the Yochid happens to be Rabbi Yossi, we still will not go with his opinion and conclude that three commoners are licensed to give permission to the slaughter of a Bechor. At this point, the Gemara makes reference to that which we saw on Lamed Vav Amid Beis. You notice a little star to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text. Try to find on the lower part of Lamed Vav Amid Beis a parallel star. At that point, we had a teaching of Rav Yehuda, and the Gemara mentioned Safek Mishmei the Rav, Safek Mishmei. It wasn't clear in whose name that ruling was made. And the ruling referred to was Gimel Matirin Es HaBechor, the Mokom Shein Mumche. In our Gemara, we just had a ruling, in effect, saying, we said the halacha is not like Rav Yossi, which means that three can matir a Bechor. So now that we see Rav, black on white, saying three can matir a Bechor, Tifshot Meha, let us conclude from this, Dehach Komaisa, the first ruling, namely the ruling that we saw on Lamed Vav Amid Beis, that said three are matir a Bechor where there is no mumche, Mishmei de Shmuel Itmar. That must have been a ruling said in the name of Shmuel. The E Mishmei de Rav, Tarti Lomali. If that had been said in the name of Rav, what do I need two rulings of Rav that say essentially the same thing? The Gemara responds and says, no, we're not going to conclude that the previous halacha was said definitely in the name of Shmuel, but rather, Chado Michlal de Chaverta Itmar. Really, one halacha was said, and the other was simply derived from the one halacha that was said. So that you don't really have in this particular Gemara two separate rulings, but rather one ruling was said and the other was derived from it. So that you basically have a situation where one halacha was said, and it wasn't clear in the name of whom it was said, and the other halacha was said definitively in the name of Rav, but the other one may have simply been something derived from that which was said here, and possibly a separate ruling of Shmuel. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.